Hello, and welcome to a special budget edition of McLean's on the Hill. I'm Cormac McSweeney, Parliament Hill Bureau Chief for City News and Rogers Radio. The Harper government has released the 2015 budget, and after seven straight years of deficits, the books are finally balanced. This year, the government will have a $1.4 billion surplus, but thanks to falling oil prices, it had to rely on the sale of GM shares, and it dipped into contingency funds to balance the books. To explain his fiscal plan, we're joined by Finance Minister Joe Oliver from the foyer of the House of Commons. Then we'll hear from the host of QP Live on McLeans.ca, Nick Taylor-Vasey, who's speaking with economic experts to get their take on the budget. And in an attempt to cut through the spin and talk about the realities of this budget, we have a special McLeans panel from the budget lockup with McLeans Ottawa Bureau Chief John Geddes and McLeans Senior Economics Editor Jason Kirby. For your politics, for your power, welcome to The Hill.
Mr. Speaker, I am proud to announce this budget is balanced.
The Harper government is finally back in the black, but barely. In his first budget, Finance Minister Joe Oliver is posting a $1.4 billion surplus in the 2015-16 fiscal year. The budget had been delayed due to falling oil prices, and now we see why. In order to achieve its promise of balancing the books, the government needed to sell its shares of GM and dip into its contingency fund. This budget isn't just about balance. It also includes a new transit fund, giving cities and provinces more cash for public transit. The issue is there's nothing for this year, and for 2017 and then 2018, it's only about $375 million each year. From 2019 on, it will be $1 billion annually. The Conservative plan will also lower taxes for small businesses, reduce taxes for families. Many of those measures were already announced or leaked to the media. And it also provides a big boost to spending for national defense and counterterrorism measures. We'll talk more about the nuts and bolts of the budget and the politics of the fiscal plan coming up with the McLeans panel. But first, shortly after tabling his budget in the House of Commons, I was able to speak with Finance Minister Joe Oliver in the foyer of the House of Commons. First of all, congratulations on your first budget.
Thank you so much.
I want to talk about it. You've balanced the books, but it's how you balance the books that's a little interesting. You use the rainy day contingency fund, $2 billion of it. You reduce it from $3 billion to $1 billion. How is it good fiscal policy to use a rainy day fund just to balance the books?
Well, here's the scoop. We balance the budget because our revenues are more than our expenses. In the past, we've had a bigger contingency fund because during a recession, during a deficit, you need one. But now we have a surplus. And so if you add the surplus to the contingency fund, you have quite a cushion. In addition to which, the price of oil was 110. Now it's about half that. And so, that particular risk has been diminished greatly. So we're very comfortable. Of course, we've based our forecasts on the advice of 15 private sector economists. So it wasn't done for political, we didn't arrive at it with a political calculation. This was based on a third-party objective analysis.
But it leaves us with little funds for emergencies. What if another Alberta hailstorm happens?
Well, we have $1 billion, and we have another billion point four, so that's $2.4 billion. We're very comfortable that we are where we are, and of course, you can always make adjustments as you go forward. This is a budget with many measures, and at the end of the day, though, families understand if you take in more than you spend, you're ahead.
Critics, including the opposition here in the House of Commons, are saying that this is more of a budget for the wealthy, not middle-class families. The TFSA increase on the limit doesn't help middle-class families, neither does income splitting. That's their charge. What do you have to say to the fact that they think it's all about the wealthy?
Well, of course, that is their charge, but they're wrong on the facts. If you look at the TFSA, this is an enormously popular measure. It's the most popular and significant measure since we've created RRSPs. 11 million Canadians are subscribers. But what's interesting is that of those who've maxed out on their contributions, 60% are earning less than $60,000 a year. This is a measure which disproportionately benefits low and middle income Canadians. It's the exact opposite of what they're saying. And when I heard that Justin Trudeau would roll back that increase, I wondered why he would want to launch an assault on the Canadian middle class. He's going to have to explain that. I can't explain it.
How many middle class families do you think can afford to put away $10,000 into a TFSA in 1 year?
Well, there are millions who've done that, and of course that's what we're going to see going forward. But it has historically advantaged the lower middle class, and it provides a terrific flexibility for those with less funds who can't get into some other investments.
The boost in defense spending, the public transit fund, and the small business tax credits or reduction in taxes, those will not come into full effect until 2019. It'll be gradual up until then. Why are you waiting until 2019 to put those into full effect?
Well, in terms of the transit fund, this is really a significant initiative. But understand, it's in addition to the $75 billion we're already devoting to infrastructure. That's the largest and longest infrastructure program in the history of Canada. $53 billion of that will go to municipalities and to the provinces, you know, according to their priorities. This is in addition to that, and it will be available when the projects are ready. These big projects are not shovel ready. When they're ready, the money that the federal government is going to invest will be ready, and we're going to do that with the private sector. It takes a little bit of time to do that. So now, in terms of, you mentioned defense, we are continuing to increase defense budgets by 2% each and every year, and then we'll ratchet it up to 3% in a few years. So it's simply not true that we're not increasing it. We are increasing it, but we'll increase it even more later. And we're also funding right now, of course, the combat mission in Iraq and Syria.
And the last thing I just want to ask you, obviously the opposition parties are not happy with this budget. They're calling for things to change. Are you open to any amendments, and where would you be open to amending?
I think they're unhappy because this budget is going to be so popular for Canadians. But look, we have a period of public debate, and we'll take a look at it. We've studied these measures very carefully. We believe they're right. If they have any ideas, of course, we'll always be listening to good ideas.
But you'd like to see it passed as is?
We'd like to see it passed, but as I say, we're always open to good ideas.
That was Finance Minister Joe Oliver speaking about his first budget from the foyer of the House of Commons. Now, we heard from the finance minister. Now it's time to go to our experts. Nick Taylor-Vasey, the host of QP Live, took some time to speak with some economics and business professors to get their take on the fiscal plan.
Thanks, Cormac. McLean's brought our EconoWatch team into the budget lockup here in Ottawa, and I asked them, what's the one thing in the budget that stood out to you? Jennifer Robson, a professor at Carleton University, had her eye on the target groups the government doesn't normally offer the kinds of goodies that win elections.
I was reading the budget to figure out what was in there for people who were more low and modest income Canadians. And I think there are some measures in there, but what kind of jumps out at me is a lot of it is we're just going to have to wait and see how this is really going to play out for them. So things like the family tax cut, we already know this is not for people who are not, you know, wealthy enough to benefit from it. The tax-free savings accounts boost in that tax room, also not for people who don't have a lot of money already on hand to set aside to save for that. But they're doing something around the WITBE. So they've noticed that about 15% of people who are eligible for the WITBE aren't getting it, and so there's a promise they're going to figure out why. So wait and see. There's a promise around some new stuff on consumer protection measures for financial consumers. I noticed there was a line in there they're going to make more ID options available for people who want to open bank accounts, but we have to wait and see, right? So a lot of this stuff, it's interesting. It's like there are some placeholders in there for lower and modest income folks, but details yet to come.
Mike Moffat, a professor at the Ivy School of Business, talked about what this budget does for manufacturers.
If you go back to the 2014 budget, the term manufacturing was just sprinkled around the document. This year, we have an entire subchapter and an entire annex with the title Supporting Manufacturing. So that seems to be the big focus of this budget, with oil prices very low, the oil industry not doing well. There's hope that manufacturing will pick up that slack, coupled with the fact that southwestern Ontario is a key electoral battlefield. So I think this government is showing their indication that they're going after some of these seats in the London and Windsor area.
Stephen Gordon, a professor at Laval University, talked about the government's surprisingly good record on fiscal restraint.
The ability of the government to hold on to its spending control over 5 years. In 2010, the government planned to hold direct program spending constant for almost 5 years. That's what is a very ambitious program because over 5 years, costs go up. Political pressures make it difficult to sustain that kind of austerity for a long time. But as it turned out, direct program spending and just general spending totally came in under what they expected to be 5 years ago. So that's a pretty impressive feat.
To watch extended versions of these clips, visit macleans.ca or download a special budget issue of Macleans on iPads and Next Issue.
That was Nick Taylor-Vasey, host of QP Live on macleans.ca, discussing the budget with business and economics professors.
Welcome to a special edition of the Macleans panel. We are in the budget lockup right now. I'm Parliament Hill reporter Cormac McSweeney with City News and Rogers Radio, and I'm joined by Macleans Ottawa Bureau Chief John Geddes, as well as Macleans Senior Business Editor Jason Kirby. So first of all, I guess, guys, what's your general impression of the budget at the moment?
I was struck by the fact that in the budget speech, which we've read, it hasn't been delivered as we're talking about, as we've read, Minister Oliver hit just about every voter demographic that the Conservatives would be looking to hit in this election year. He's got the expected stuff for middle-class families. He's got something for the Ontario manufacturing economy, a special vote battleground there. He's got something for immigrant groups to help them sort of send money home. He's got stuff for seniors, which we kind of expected, make it easier for them to withdraw money during their retirement years, less of a tax penalty there. Really, every voter demographic we'd expect him to target, they're all targeted right in the speech with major measures.
So that's the politics of it all. What about the economics of it all?
Well, the economics and the politics, it's hard to separate them. But, I mean, this is a budget that's driving home the point that this government wants to leave as much money in your pocket as possible. I mean, the tax measures are really just they're just throughout. They're just reminding you constantly how much they've saved. Families can save something like $40 billion based on the tax measures since 2006. And driving home again things like the RIF changes for seniors, doubling the TFSA, all of these things that are really just meant to put more money in people's pockets. And they're going to do everything they can to remind people about that.
And I'll just follow up on that, Jason. We heard a lot about these measures going into the budget. Mm-hmm. A lot of it was leaked or just announced by the government. Is there anything new for families that you see in this budget?
Well, I mean, in terms of new things is the RIF changes. I mean, it was leaked in advance. But that is something that is really going to strike home because there's been a real thorn for seniors groups, for seniors, for individuals who've been complaining about how rigid the requirements are, forcing them to withdraw money. People are living longer. They want to be able to hold on to that money and not be forced to take it out and expose it to tax. So, I mean, I think that that's going to be something that really jumps out.
With a group of people who really vote, too.
They really do vote, yes. Yeah. I mean, the press release that went out basically had this big sticker saying seniors vote right at the top of it from one of the organizations. I mean, it was just a reminder to the government, yeah, we're the ones who show up on ballot day, on election day. Yeah.
All right, now, one question is, not so much that they balance the books. We have a $1.4 billion surplus. Yeah. The government promised that, but it's how they balance the budget.
And the big surprise there, I think, is that they took the contingency reserve, which had been set at $3 billion a year for the last few years and was reconfirmed at $3 billion a year in last fall's economic update, and they sliced it down to $1 billion a year, essentially a $2 billion gift that Joe Oliver gave himself for this budget, without which he wouldn't be in surplus this year. This budget would not be written in black ink without that change. There's two things about that. One is it's hard to see why it was done. Some of the officials here have talked about the fact that they've already built in some of the downside of oil prices dropping, so they argue there's less volatility potential there. But still, it looks pretty convenient as a mechanism to get that balanced books claim out there before they have to go to the polls.
And also the sell of GM shares. I mean, that brought in for this year alone $2.2 billion.
Very important. But we kind of knew that, Cormac? So coming into this room, I thought, well, they've got that $2.2 billion from GM. What else have they got? And then I looked at the line that had on the contingency reserves and thought, whoa, I wasn't expecting that to come. So that was a surprise to me.
And I mean, we saw with the Alberta hailstorms, the government ended up pumping a lot of money into Alberta. So if we see another natural disaster like that, that could deplete the contingency fund rather quickly.
Sure, and I would point out they didn't just change the contingency reserve down to one for this year or next year. They've pushed it out in some of the out years as well, for which it's pretty hard to predict the economy in 2017-18. The fact that they've decided $1 billion is okay as a contingency reserve for that year when we really don't know what's going to happen, it strikes me as not prudent budgeting.
So, Jason, the forecast looking out has diminished significantly over the next 5 years compared to what they had in the fall economic update, thanks mainly to oil.
Mainly to the oil price drop, that's for sure. And yet at the same time, they are committing themselves to constrain spending. So we're going to continue to see that, and that's going to become even more important if they're going to maintain these budget balances going forward that they say are going to happen, because, you know, we're only just now starting to see the oil impact, the lower oil price impact come into the economy. Governor Poloz has said that you know, now it's the time where it's starting to hit. Even though the price collapse started last June, you know, it's hitting us now.
And what do you guys think of the infrastructure fund, specifically the transit fund that they're bringing in? Not a lot of money right off the bat. It's something that cities and provinces have been asking for.
Yeah.
But in 2019, that's when we hit the $1 billion mark that the government's going to be talking about.
You know, Cormac, our colleague Paul Wells likes to talk in terms of swords and shields on policy. Their swords are policy where they're being aggressive, they think they win. Shields is where they want to protect themselves from attack. I see this infrastructure thing as protect yourself from attack. You're going to have premiers and provinces coming at you saying, where's some money? You're going to have Justin Trudeau almost certainly emphasizing infrastructure spending. They need a line that they can come back on, and this is a line they can come back on. Now, granted, you're absolutely right. It's an amount of spending that's pushed off into the out years. That's not going to please a lot of people, but it is something you can say. We've got this money coming. This is our infrastructure plan.
Now, for small businesses, Jason, mm-hmm. we're seeing a reduction in their taxes from 11% to 9%. Mm-hmm. How is that going to impact the economy?
Oh, well, the government is going to tell you that you leave that money in the pockets of the small businesses. They're going to take that money and they're going to reinvest. It's true that small businesses are a massive part of the Canadian economy, I think contributing something like 40% of GDP. So, you know, it is potentially a really big point. But I'd also say that, you know, we've seen the government reduce a lot of corporate taxes over recent years, and we still haven't really seen businesses invest and do all the things that are supposed to happen, take all that money that they've got left in their books and hire people and invest. And so, you know, it's going to be a kind of a wait and see game to see whether small businesses respond any better than the larger companies have.
And that's the risk, right? They just pocket the profits and move on.
That's what's been happening.
Absolutely.
That's what's been happening.
All right. And I'm just looking at my list here of other things that we need to speak about. But defense and terror spending, another big thing that the government is pushing into. Defense spending doesn't start right away, but eventually they start to increase the spending there. Counterterrorism over the next 5 years, $292 million there.
Yeah. Again, this is a good election. Subject for the Conservatives. They like to talk themselves as the people who protect Canadian safety, who care about these things, paint the opposition parties as being soft on that sort of thing. And I would point out that there has been, people have started to take note that although the Conservatives did increase spending on defense in their early years in power, that has trailed off in recent years. And people like Kevin Page, the former Parliamentary Budget Officer, has raised a flag and said, hey, wait a minute, they're still talking about defense in a big way, but spending has trailed down. So this bump that we're seeing in this budget, I think, is something of a reaction to that. They don't want to seem weakened on their claim to being the sort of champions of the Canadian military.
All right, and then I'm just going to talk about what happens in the months ahead and what you'll both be looking for. John, I'll ask you about the politics in a second, but first, from the business point of view, what are you going to be looking at in the months ahead to see how this budget impacts the Canadian economy?
Well, you know, it's funny. I would think that actually it's not going to be the budget that we're going to be needing to watch. It's going to be things like the oil price and what really happens there. You know, in the last little while, we've seen prices start to come back up. And if that continues to happen, that's going to really put the government in a good position going into the election. But who knows whether that's just what they call a dead cat bounce in oil prices, and they might head down again, and we're going to see more problems continue. So I think that that's even more important than any of the budget measures, really.
That's the volatility, the
big question mark, yeah.
All right, and then from the political point of view, we're heading to the election. Yeah. What are you going to be looking for in the months and weeks ahead?
Well, obviously, you need to see now the opposition parties come up with something that is an alternative to this budget. Normally, when we think about budgets, the opposition parties oppose them. You know, that's all they have to do. In an election area where the campaign's so close, they really do need to put alternatives in the window to make it seem plausible, I would say. So now we think, will we see a counter line on taxes, for example? Are either of the NDP or the Liberals going to propose a different vision for family taxes or taxes for individuals? Are any of them going to claim that they would move more quickly on infrastructure? We talked a minute ago about how some of the new infrastructure spending in this budget is pushed off into the out years. Will we see the NDP or the Liberals say, no, we're going to spend now. We're going to get that spending going quickly as a sort of stimulus measure in this post-oil price collapse economy where maybe a little stimulus is needed?
And are they left at a disadvantage with this razor-thin surplus of $1.4 billion and I think $1.7 the year after?
Yeah, absolutely. There's not a lot of fiscal wiggle room here. that raises another question. Are there things that they would say they would pull back from this? We already know they would cancel the income splitting. Both the opposition parties would cancel income splitting. The NDP would roll back some corporate tax breaks from past years. Are there other measures in this budget that either of the opposition parties will come out and say, no, we wouldn't do that? That's an interesting question.
All right, excellent. Thank you very much, McLean's Auto Bureau Chief John Geddes.
Thanks, Cormac.
McLean's Senior Business Editor Jason Kirby. And I'm Cormac McSweeney, Parliament Hill Bureau Chief for City News and Rogers Radio.
That's it for this special budget episode of McLean's on the Hill. For more of your politics and power, join us this weekend for our regular episode of The Hill.